Council, I think you were both here for the opening remarks. But for anyone else that's come in late, welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Before we hear the next argument, I just want to remind everyone there's no recording of the proceedings. It is being live streamed on Zoom, and there will be an official audio recording produced. Appellant will have 15 minutes, respondent 15, and then appellant will have 5. Council, whenever you're ready to proceed, if you could just identify yourself. And I'm sorry, I need to call the case. This is A221696, Alan Roland Kilgore versus Ellen Leah Brockman, formerly known as Ellen Leah Kilgore. Go ahead, Council.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the court, Council. My name is Jevin Binman, and I represent the appellant, Al Kilgore. This matter arises from the district court's denial of Mr. Kilgore's motion to amend his spousal maintenance obligation. The district court's order made two critical errors that affected the outcome here. First, the district court misapplied Minnesota Statute Section 518A.39, Subdivision 2, by failing to use the same methodology to calculate Mr. Kilgore's current gross income as was used in the original maintenance order. Second, the district court improperly averaged Mr. Kilgore's 2020 and 2021 income while ignoring evidence of his 2022 income. As a result of these errors, the district court incorrectly concluded that Mr. Kilgore's gross income had decreased by less than 20%, and therefore he was not entitled to the statutory presumption that the prior maintenance order was unreasonable and unfair. Appellant is entitled to reversal of the district court's order and a remand to properly calculate his current gross income. Now, I'd like to start with the language of Section 518A.39. I'm looking at Subdivision 2B5, which is the one of the tests that can be used to determine a presumption of a substantial change in circumstances. And it states that if the gross income of an obligor or obligee has decreased by at least 20% through no fault or choice of the party, then that is a reason to apply the statutory presumption that the current order is unreasonable. In order for the district court to determine whether the gross income decreased by 20%, it needs to apply a comparative analysis. And this is from the Warrington case from 2020 from this court.
Can I stop you there for just a second, Counsel? The Warrington cases are non-precedential opinions from this court. They do rely on precedential opinions. So are you really relying on Warrington, or are you relying on longstanding law and precedent of this court?
Thank you for that clarification, Your Honor. I agree the Warrington court is and I'm right. relying on...
I didn't see anything unique in the Warrington opinions. But, you know, let me know if you read them otherwise that we need to adopt some new rule of law or interpretation of this statute, which has been applied many, many times.
No. Yeah. I agree with you, Your Honor. Okay. I think that Warrington is a good example of the way that this statute is applied, which is that in order to determine a decrease, and I think just reading the plain language of the statute as well, in order to determine a decrease, the court needs to be comparing apples to apples. So we have a calculation from the 2021 order that essentially, and if you look at page 3-2 of appellant's addendum, it shows this more specifically. But the three primary pieces of income that were used in that determination were Mr. Kilgore's income, the company's income, and then a somewhat smaller amount for health insurance premiums paid. So, what Mr. Kilgore requested at the district court is he submitted evidence of his income and the company's income, and I'll acknowledge that the health insurance premiums should be included in that as well. The respondent requested a very different analysis, which instead of taking
a look. So before you get to the respondent's request in this case, I want to go back and look at your request, all right? And I'm talking about your request on the evidence that you presented to the district court in support of your motion to modify. Because you're asking, and I just want to assume for a moment that an apples-to-apples comparison is required. I'm not convinced it is, but let's just say it is for a moment. You're saying we didn't have it here, and you're trying to compare what the information the district court had at the beginning. The district court had this Baker-Tilly analysis, historical cash flow analysis, 5 years, right? And
correct.
You're right in that it's different from what was submitted by anybody, you, your client, or respondents. But doesn't the burden fall to the party making the motion to modify to present the district court with the apples-to-apples evidence if that's what you want? I don't see that in your submission. You simply provided tax forms. I mean, they have to be interpreted. Baker Tilly did it when the initial decree for maintenance was issued.
I would agree, Your Honor, that there was not a submission in the similar form that as the Baker Tilly analysis. What I would say is that what the appellant presented to the district court was evidence of a decreasing income year over year. If you go back to even to 2017, you see a decrease in the income every year, and the 2020 and 2021 tax returns and other information that was provided as to 2022 shows that decline, and that, in fact, a precipitous decline with the advent of the COVID-19 pandemic.
And I think that's right, counsel, that is the evidence you presented, and the district court did consider it, right? The district court did review and consider the evidence that was submitted by Mr. Kilgore in support of his motion to modify. Now, I know that you have arguments in your second issue about how that consideration involved an abuse of discretion, but just looking at the first, you know, did the district court track with the statutory analysis? District court considered the evidence. Your issue you're raising on appeal is this idea that the district court was required to do an apples-to-apples comparison, right? And I don't see that in the statute, and I really don't see it in your evidence. And it's your burden, Mr. Kilgore's burden, to present the evidence to the court that supports modification, right? So if you wanted to have the same apples-to-apples comparison, didn't it fall to you? That's my legal question. Didn't it fall to you to present that?
I would agree that the burden is on the appellant, but I would disagree in that I believe that the appellant did present that evidence to make that comparison.
But we don't have that same historical cash flow analysis, do we? I mean, in we being the record, the appellate record doesn't include it. I think you already said that.
The appellate record does not have, I would agree that the appellate record does not have a form or a document in the same form as the Baker Tilly analysis.
Not just the same form. I mean, I read your brief. You're talking about formulas and methodologies. The methodology of the Baker Tilly analysis is completely different from what Mr. Kilgore presented in support of his motion to modify, isn't it?
I think that the formula that Mr. Kilgore supplied is similar in the respects that it is considering as the primary evidence of Mr. Kilgore's income, his personal income on his tax return, and the income of his company. And the difference here in what respondent is doing is that instead of considering the income of the company, it's considering the business expenses that were incurred by the company and saying that those expenses should be somehow substituted for the company's income. And the result of that is that it creates a completely different analysis here because due to the difficulties of the company had much lower income in 2020 and 2021 and precipitously declined during those two years so that the business income or the business expenses, if that is used as a substitute, it creates a completely different picture of how the company is performing.
You don't argue that the district court incorrectly applied 518A.30 in calculating current gross income. That's not the argument, correct?
I agree that is not the argument before this court.
And there's no indication that the current gross income calculation that the district court did was a violation of 518A.30.
I guess I would clarify, Your Honor, that the violation or the mistake here was that the determination of the company's income was completed differently between the 2021 order and the 2022 order.
In reference to the expenses.
In reference to the expenses, exactly.
Your argument is that 518A.39 compels the use of the same methodology for both baseline and current.
Well, just based on the language that the court has to determine whether gross income has decreased by at least 20%. And the only way
to... presumption, counsel. Right?
For the presumption.
For the presumption.
Correct.
Now, this district court decided the presumption didn't apply, but then went on to do the complete analysis under the modification statute, right? Because really the larger picture in the modification statute is that second step. Has there been a substantial change in circumstances that renders the maintenance awarded in the decree unreasonable and unfair? And the district court did go on to make that determination, right?
The district court did perform a calculation and did ultimately conclude that.
But you don't lose just because you don't have the presumption. A party moving to modify maintenance doesn't lose just because they don't have a presumption, right?
I agree that the party doesn't lose for that reason, but the burden of proof is very important here, and if the burden of proof is shifted to the respondent, that could certainly affect the district court's decision after that initial decision is made as to who has the burden of proof and who is presumed to be, or whether a change of circumstances is presumed to be correct.
So I would like to hear from you more on the business expenses question. So that issue, as I read it, was raised by Brockman in response to your motion to modify. So raised in the affidavit, I think, of counsel, questioning whether those business expenses were in fact ordinary and necessary business expenses, or were they payments that were made to personally, that amounted to personal income to Mr. Kilgore. I didn't see a response from you, Mr. Kilgore, in response to that. I mean, it's no denial. Am I wrong about that? And I'm talking about the district court record. I don't see a denial in that regard. In fact, there were some comments made at the hearing that suggested that you acknowledged that the company had in fact paid the legal fees for the dissolution matter, which amounted to many thousands of dollars. So did you challenge that below?
Your Honor, as I stand here at this moment, I believe that there is a challenge to that in the transcript, and perhaps I can rifle through that and address
the
rebuttal.
There were some comments, yeah, I don't recall, counsel, whether you were counsel that argued it or not. There were some comments certainly about travel expenses being for the benefit of the company, but, you know, that's a small part, relatively, of the district court's analysis. And what I don't see is any submission by Mr. Kilgore that's rebuts the argument made by counsel. And I'm sure you know where I'm headed. I mean, the statute that talks about how to compute income for the self-employed specifically acknowledges that the burden to establish ordinary and necessary business expenses falls to the party who is asserting that they are ordinary and necessary business expenses. That would be Mr. Kilgore, right?
I would agree with that, Your Honor. Okay. And I would also say that I would also agree that there was not an independent submission outside of the arguments of counsel at the hearing. I was not present at the hearing, but that is my understanding of the record. My response, though, would be that the issue is less about what the business expenses were, and rather, were the business expenses considered in the initial calculation?
But are you aware of any authority where, on a modification, a district court has gone back and then recalculated the baseline to include things that were left out, like these business expenses that were used in calculating the current gross income?
I'm not aware of any case law to that effect, Your Honor. And I raised that in my brief as an example of the difficulty that this raises as a result of what the district court did here. And the business expenses that were, you know, if they had been considered in 2021, it would have resulted in a drastically different income for that order, which would have changed the comparison as to whether the 20% threshold had been reached. I'd like to very briefly, in my 1 minute remaining, just touch on the second issue about averaging multiple years of income. Again, this court, the statute requires a determination of the petitioner's gross income. And in the CEFCO case, this court found that the district court erred by not considering evidence of current income. Here, the district court averaged together the 2020 and 2021 incomes and then didn't consider at all the evidence that Mr. Kilgore presented regarding his 2022 income. And if we're trying to determine current income, that is a clear abuse of discretion because the district court didn't find in this case that there was any fluctuation of his income, and therefore the most current income should be the piece that the court is looking at. And I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Rob Olson. I represent Ellen Brockman, who is seated in the gallery in the back there. I didn't handle the trial on this matter, but for way of background, the trial court, and that was Judge Mark Ireland, he decided based on a Baker-Tilly analysis, Tom Harges. I practice family law. Tom Harges is probably the gold standard in that area. That's not in the record. That's my comment. But the trial court relied on a five-year average, and the reason they averaged the income is because the income bumps all over. This company called Roland Numeric, it's a job shop. It makes products for larger companies, components, things like that. And it bumps up and down. And so he determined that it would make sense to do a five-year average. There was no the trial judge said that it was appropriate due to the cyclical nature of the business. That's the standard that you apply. So there was no argument at the trial. They actually had a trial. It wasn't a stipulated decree, but they had the report from Baker-Tilly was submitted as a neutral report, and the parties both relied on that. Five-year average, same person, same business, says it's appropriate to average the income. So then we had the motion to terminate or modify the order brought by Mr. Kilgore, and we have a new judge. We had Judge Japal Harris. You kind of rotate those things in Ramsey County. So Judge Harris rotated into family court. Judge Ireland rotated out, so it landed on his desk. They brought the motion saying, based solely on his taxable income, he's making hardly nothing, a lot less, and I don't have the specific numbers, but that's what they argued, just that. I responded that said, well, actually, the statute, 518A30, says that here's what the judge is supposed to do for self-employment income or operation of a business. Look at everything, including deductions, and the person seeking to deduct an expense has the burden of proving, if challenged, that the expense is ordinary and necessary. Well, Mr. Kilgore had deducted a lot of things on his tax returns. And some of those things included in the year 2020, he had legal and professional fees of $31,382. He was ordered in the trial court to pay my client's a portion of her attorney's fees. He paid attorney's fees for himself, and we argued that this was related to his divorce. There was no indication in Mr. Harches' previous report, the Baker-Tilly report, that they considered attorney's fees, but at that point, those hadn't been deducted on any tax return because it was 2015 through 2019, and they had not been apparently deducted yet. So
excuse me, but you would agree, I mean, to be fair to counsel's argument, that it's impossible under 518A.30 to truly determine whether there's a 20% decrease if you're not using the same methodology.
Oh, I believe that the methodologies were the same. Mr. Hargis looked at it, and he looked at whatever were appropriate business expenses, but he wasn't, there weren't those large attorney's fees at that point. That's one of the big differences, $31,000 in 2020 and $59,000 in change in 2021. I believe that if Mr. Hargis would have, you know, that we called that into question.
So your position isn't that the methodology was different, it's just that the information wasn't even available at the time the baseline gross income was calculated.
Yes, I and nobody knows here what was in the, you know, in that what he considered, but we're here and we challenged some of the expenses that were taken on as a tax return. They had to prove that it was ordinary and necessary. We challenged it. Nobody came and said, well, actually, you know, we had a trademark issue or we had this or we had that. We said this was for divorce. You paid for your divorce and now you're deducting it so you can get lower spousal maintenance. And crickets, nothing. So the judge then relied on that and said, you know, I'm going to include that in the income. I argued that the PPP money that Mr. Kilgore got, $145,000, should have been included in his income, because that's one of those situations with the federal government in response to COVID, gave business owners a lot of free money.
Free money and not taxable.
Non-taxable. So it was really free money. But Judge Jepal Harris, in his order, in footnote 1 on page 5, he said, income included wages plus distributions. The court excluded the $145,071 distribution made based on the PPP loan based on the information that it went into the business. So he didn't include that. I had argued that he should because I didn't believe there was anything in the record, but I didn't appeal that. I mean, but in any event, Judge Harris he whittled down from what I had argued was the income, and he made a finding as to what the income was. And he said, well, the average income for these 2 years is $167,000 and change. So therefore, he doesn't meet the initial, he doesn't, you know, there's this presumption against changing it if it's 20%. But then, as Judge Bratfeld pointed out, Judge Harris didn't stop there. He went on to analyze and said, well, look at where she's at, look at where he's at, here's the expenses. And I don't think that the order was unreasonable or unfair. Therefore, he concluded that. He didn't just stop at the 20% point. He did what we asked trial judges to do. So, and also this attempt to make Baker Tilly somehow, now that's, you got to follow, and you got to basically, every time you come back to court, you got to hire Baker Tilly to do this, or somebody's got to go inside their mind and figure out exactly what they were doing when they did it. No, we have to apply the statute. Judge Harris did it, 518A30. Now, if they would have gone out, if the appellant would have gone out and hired Mr. Hargis, then we could have had a chance perhaps to, you know, look at that and see what it was. But that's not in the record at all. So to make that somehow that makes Baker Tilly the law, not 518.830. So it was his burden. Now, as far as averaging, I put it in my brief. I believe that given the trial court's finding that the income fluctuates in this kind of business, I understand Judge Harris didn't make that specific finding.
Let me ask you about that, counsel. I think that Mr. Kilgore's argument on that is that as of the modification motion, he presented evidence of a steady decrease. And I think even if we look at the affidavit that you submitted, which is really more like a memorandum of law, I think, has also indicates a decline in income for both 2020 and 2021. So where's the fluctuation as of the motion to modify? We don't have a new finding by the district court that the income is still fluctuating.
Yeah, it's my argument that I believe that Judge Harris thought that it was appropriate to average, given that it fluctuates, given that COVID was a down year. And it wasn't like it had fluctuated that much. There were some years in that five-year average that were under 200,000. He had some real big years. He had some smaller years. So he averaged out to 200,000. So this wasn't anything unusual.
We have to infer that, though, don't we, from the district court's order? Well, what you're saying right now, I mean, that the judge looked at it in a bigger picture than just the last 2 years?
Yes, he looked at, you know, here was the baseline. The baseline before was based on average income. This is what I'm doing. And at the trial court, nobody argued that that was inappropriate. They, in fact, had argued that the court, if you look at what I made in the 2 years just on my tax return, you should go down. They didn't say, well, just look at the last year that's lower than the year before. They argued that, you know, if you put those two together, he met the 20% burden, or, you know, he rebutted the presumption. So therefore, you know, Judge Harris, you know, I believe he made a careful finding. He reviewed the evidence. Denied it, and I'm asking that you affirm his ruling. Unless the court has any other questions, I'll complete my argument at that point, and a little short, like I expected.
Thank you.
Counsel, do you agree that payments made by the business for attorney's fees for a dissolution is not an appropriate business expense, but in fact should be considered income?
Your Honor, I would agree that that is a finding under 518A.30 that the court could make. But the problem here is that the court did not include those same expenses in the 2021.
Well, but, I mean, they didn't have those expenses in 2021, did he?
I don't have the 2015 to 2019 in front of me, so I'm afraid I can't answer that question at this moment. But
isn't it your client's burden? I mean, like Judge Bradwell pointed out, if those are expenses that are ordinary and necessary business expenses that should not be considered income, isn't it on Mr. Kilgore to show that to the district court and make that part of the record on appeal?
I would agree that it's Mr. Kilgore's burden to show what his income is, and my argument here is that the business expenses that the district court adopted as part of Mr. Kilgore's income were not considered as part of his income in the 2021 order.
Well, again, that dissolution attorney's fees payment wasn't paid each year; it was paid just in 1 year, was it not?
It would have been paid in the 2020 to 2021 time period, I would assume anyway.
So in that time period, it's appropriate for that to be taken out and not considered a business income. You're not arguing that when the business paid the owner's personal tax or personal attorney's fees from the dissolution, that somehow that was a business income item.
In that case, Your Honor, I would say that the district court didn't make that finding and just simply adopted respondents the numbers that were offered by the respondents. So we don't know why the district court.
You agree that was roughly $70,000.
I agree with those numbers. Yes. Now that doesn't that doesn't affect the other business expenses that were also included in the calculation, including travel, lodging, food, which, you know, as at least was argued at the hearing before the district court, were legitimate business expenses. If I may, I'd like to briefly turn to the other argument, I believe counsel's language was that Judge Ireland in the first order had found that that Mr. Kilgore's income bumps all over, and Judge Ireland had concluded that that the income was cyclical, and it's clear from the record here that even if you use the income that the district court found for 2020 and 2021, that we have a steady decrease from the high mark in 2017 through 2022.
Doesn't that require us to look at the profit and loss sheet from 2022, which was not authenticated and it wasn't the final document provided by the IRS, right?
Correct, because this was in 2022, so the signed tax records were not available yet. But, you know, even if you look at 2017, 2018, 2019, 2020, 2021, you see this precipitous drop. There's no findings that there's no findings that the 2020 and 2021 tax records were somehow unreliable in terms of the change in Mr. Kilgore's income. And also, you know, to briefly talk about the 2022 evidence, even though it's not a tax record, there was no finding that that was unreliable or somehow deficient. And the court is silent on why it didn't consider that. When you take all this together, it creates a clear picture that Mr. Kilgore's income is dropping every year, and therefore looking back all the way to 2020, which predates the original spousal maintenance order, was clear error. Unless the court has any further questions, I would ask that the court reverse the decision of the district court and remand for a recalculation of Mr. Kilgore's income. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you for your arguments today. The matter is submitted. We will issue a decision in due course.